A couple of months ago, I wrote a column which got me more hate mail than anything I can remember. It was a piece in praise of the Australian politician, saying that they weren't anything like the miserable bastards people painted them, that many of them were quite fine human beings, in fact, exemplary. And I listed off a few names, particular favourites, and to my delight, three of them are here with me tonight. Fred Chaney, Janine Haines and John Button. Now, of course, Fred was a one-time minister in the Fraser government, more recently a distinguished backbencher. Janine, the former leader of the Democrats, whose absence has been sadly noted, and ex-Labor senator and, of course, minister extraordinaire John Button. Janine and Fred have formed a coalition in Canberra because they're squeezed into the same studio, a sort of a unity ticket down there, where John is on the blower up at Port Douglas, where he stresses he is not on holidays, but writing another splendid column for the Sydney Morning Herald. Look, thanks for coming in. I'll start with you, if I might, Janine. With the wisdom of hindsight, if you could have your life over again, would you do it again? Would you have a crack at the Democrats?
I wouldn't do anything differently. Not from day
one. You regret
one.
Nothing.
I regret nothing. I think it's an absolute total waste of time looking back and saying, if I'd only done this, if I'd only caught that tram, if I hadn't married this man, if I hadn't taken that job, what a load of garbage. You can't change it. Why bother? Just go forward.
Mm. Fred, would you, with the wisdom of hindsight, the only sort of wisdom that's worth much, would you have gone and done it again, or would you do it again, and would you do it again in the Senate?
Well, I sometimes think that if I had the wisdom of hindsight, I'd have got out in 1983, because 10 years in opposition wasn't a lot of fun. But if I had to do the lot or nothing, I'd certainly have done the lot. And if the only thing that the only office I'd held had been Minister for Aboriginal Affairs for 2 years, that would have justified it. I think I really found that an extraordinarily satisfying period of my life, and it made made the rest of it worthwhile.
John, one of your funniest metaphors about Canberra was that it was a boarding school. Well, you're out of boarding school now. How does it feel?
Oh, it feels pretty good, as I recall it did when I left boarding school. I don't think about it very much. It's like a sort of black hole in my life. I'm doing other things now, and I guess the analogy is rather like probably being in jail rather than boarding school. You don't miss the routine meals and waters and a lot of the other prisoners, actually.
I would say that something that characterises the three of you, you're all pretty independent of spirit, but you've also, I think, got an inner life. The politicians I feel sad about, or sorry for, no, I don't, bugger them, are the ones that really have nothing to go to, nothing inside them apart from politics. Janine?
Yeah, I always really felt sorriest for the average backbencher, the one who is a party hack, who was there to fill a seat, there to give a vote. We never got big enough to have any of those. And I don't know that I would really have ever liked to have been amongst their number, because I guess when you've been like Fred and John, and you've been ministers, and you've had a really good opportunity to change things, and Fred's comments about being Minister for Aboriginal Affairs I think were very pertinent, or when you've been in my position where you can at least sort of skim the water of fame, I think that you leave politics with a basket load of good memories, whereas I, for the life of me, can't imagine what some of the more thick backbenchers leave politics with, apart from a pension.
Which is why so many of them cling to it, isn't it, Fred? Because they really fear life after politics. What the hell are they going to do? I mean, you get someone like Nick Greiner, who's currently treading more boards than Laurence Olivier ever managed, who's doing wonderfully. But very few politicians walk out that door into a post-political career of any consequence, as the sad spectacle of the last Prime Minister reminds us.
I think the transition is quite difficult in Australia, and I've talked to a lot of politicians, and I think it is one of the difficulties of political life. But I wouldn't feel too sorry for anyone who's in politics, because I think it's an extraordinary experience, and it's often awful, but it's never boring. And I think the worst thing about it is that like any team game, you're eventually pretty worn down. I mean, John Button seemed to sort of skate on the edge of this business of always being stuck with ministerial responsibility and having to toe the line.
But John was cute.
But he blew a lot of raspberries, though, didn't he?
Yeah, no, I mean, he perhaps more than anyone else escaped the trap, but I think it knocks the edges off everybody, and it's a very good idea to get out before you're completely crazy.
John, did you just blow your nose or a raspberry?
No, probably a raspberry, I think. I actually coughed.
Did you?
But John, I
remember you making a point, John, in fact you made it quite often after 75, that seemed to be the end of the cross-bench friendships. Now, there used to be some extraordinary friendships across the party lines. I remember Jim Cairns and Bob Menzies, for God's sake, and even the odd love affair in the Senate, which we won't go into. Do those endure, John, in the 80s or the 90s?
No, I don't think so very much. I mean, I'm always pleased to see somebody like Fred Cheney. I in fact, saw him in Oxford Street in London a month or so ago, I think.
Well, it wouldn't be Oxford Street in Sydney, would it?
Well, I hope not, but it could have been. I'm sure it was London, Phil. I'm sure it was London. But I think there was probably sort of more cross-party camaraderie in those older days because, you see, you had a sort of permanent Liberal government and a permanent opposition. And the sad thing is that they each sort of knew their place in the world in those days. And, you know, that sort of determined all their relationships. I mean, there was far more, I think Fred will agree with this, there was far more sort of going to the bar in the evening than amongst those older people than there has been in the last 10 or 15 years. And I think there has been a change in that sense.
I think in part, though, that change is a change in the community. I mean, I first had a lot to do with politics because my father was in it, and I found that post-war generation very attractive people. They seemed to have a lot in common, and I think the war experience for a lot of them was a very unifying thing. They took the country very seriously, but and the political differences weren't as important. I think our generation hasn't been quite like that, and I think the 75 incident did make a difference.
Mm. But there used to be some very interesting mergers of interest in the Senate. Now, I think, for instance, of, say, Chip and Murphy working together on an issue like censorship. Does that still occur? Can it still occur, Janine?
Oh, I don't agree.
Well, that wasn't in the Senate, Phil. I mean, Chip was not in the Senate at the time that happened. Chip was in the House of Representatives.
Okay, well, but the point is still that there were politicians from opposite sides of the House who found an issue on which they agreed and they helped change Australia.
Well, I think, Philip, one of the things that was notable in the Senate was the committee activities, which go back now a very long way. But when John Button and I were first in the Senate in 74, 75, I think one of the surprises to me was the way the committee that we were both on that looked at one of the major proposals of the Whitlam government came out in a very critical way about that proposal, the National Compensation Scheme. You'd remember that, no doubt, John. Whitlam had a few words to say, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of cooperation, I think, still goes on at the committee level on issues that aren't necessarily frontline political issues.
What about the intimacy, Janine, between politicians and the press gallery?
You've got to be joking.
Well, between certain politicians and the press gallery.
Well, since I wasn't ever one of them, I really can't speak on that behalf. I mean, I have an absolutely, totally low regard for the Canberra Press Gallery. And still, I had it then and I still have it.
Why?
Because they're lazy. Because they believe that the only action that happens is in the House, because they don't cover Senate debates, because they listen to what politicians say in the House of Representatives and then believe that this is exactly what's going to happen in the Senate. They don't cover issues in any great detail. They are basically lazy.
Mm.
I mean, I will never forget the fact, for example, that the press gallery wasn't even remotely interested in the fact in 1989 that every single Liberal Party and National Party senator voted against an amendment of John Hewson's, for God's sake. Mm. It didn't, along with the Labor Party. Didn't bother them in the slightest that I'd moved an amendment that Hewson had argued strongly for in the House of Representatives, got a lot of publicity for, and then his colleagues in the Senate voted to defeat it.
The gallery wasn't interested. Not only the press gallery didn't notice it, nor did I.
Well, it's there. You can check it out, John.
John, the same withering contempt for the Fourth Estate from you?
No, but I think they suffer from the same problem as politicians do. I mean, and that is one of sort of isolation. Canberra is an isolated place. The Press Gallery and Parliament House, particularly the new Parliament
yes.
House, are isolated places. And what you have there is perhaps 1,500 people who work in that building. And they're all, I think in some ways they all suffer from that same thing. Many of the Press Gallery have been there too long too. I mean, there's not sufficient fresh talent going into the Press Gallery. There are a lot of young people there, but I said talent.
John's right about the increasing isolation in the new Parliament House. I think that building has caused an increasing distance between politicians and the public, but it's also caused an increasing distance between politicians and each other, with the House so decidedly set apart from the Senate, with the executive located in its own little place. One of the nice things about the wedding cake over the way from the lake was that to do absolutely anything other than use the phone, you had to go out of your office, so you bumped into people all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, you had to read a newspaper. You virtually had to go out to the little racks that had newspapers on there to go and talk to a colleague. You had to wander down a corridor and you actually bumped into people then, and it might be that I'd bumped into Fred and we had a chat about something that was coming up, or I ran into Don Grimes and had a discussion, and that does not happen in the new House.
Fred, I don't want to embarrass you, but I suspect that when you went into politics you were an idealist.
I don't know.
You don't remember now?
But yeah, I think he was. Look,
I still
want to say something about the building, but I don't agree with this criticism of the building.
Look, let's leave the building out for a minute, Fred, because I want to come back to this notion that many people, apart from the aforementioned party hacks, actually get into politics because they're idealists. Does it survive the process? Is there any part of you left, Fred, that you could now describe as idealistic?
I think that most people who go into politics are idealistic about it in some way. They're all different in the way they approach it. But the truth is, if you're part of a team effort, which John Button has been since... He went on the front bench, 15 years ago, John, or more, and I'm in the same position. You're bound by rules of working as a team, with promoting the common view as against your individual view, and I think that is very wearing, and I think that's one of the reasons why you shouldn't stick around too long, that I think you do run the risk of losing sight of what it's really all about.
Does your vorpal sword still glint in the sun, John?
My awful what?
Your vorpal sword.
Yeah. Look, don't let's follow that up.
Well, let's get a sword out of it. Have you escaped the boarding school with your sense of what's right and wrong intact?
Oh, yes, I think so. I'm much more sceptical about political processes, of course, than when I went into politics. I mean, if one had an idealism about the political process, I think you lose that fairly quickly. Well, perhaps not quickly, but after a few years there. I mean, I found myself the other day when the G7 countries met in Tokyo and they made some ridiculous pronouncements about trade. I recognised them as being phony pronouncements, and I thought, you know, bloody politicians, they're telling fibs again. You know? And I was quite angry about it. Well, that sort of scepticism comes, I think, from being in the process, you know?
I think what John's saying is he doesn't know too much about vorpal swords, but there are plenty of slithy toves around.
Yeah, well, Janine, of course. Most of them are, of course, in the Liberal Party, aren't they?
I wouldn't say that.
Janine, what about you? Because you...
Oh, I'm probably a slithy tove too.
But you were so incandescent with political hopes and aspirations when I first met you.
You've got three people rolling around.
Are you now a sort of a blown fluoro tube?
Yes, I flicker every so often and then go back to dimness.
But seriously, I mean, John says that he now feels sceptical about the process. Do you think that I mean, that's one of the problems, for God's sake. The whole world's sceptical about the process. The Maastricht vote shows scepticism.
Oh, dear.
The rising tides of skinheads show scepticism. I'm trying to convince people that the political process is still worth worth committing to. You guys are really talking about...
Has it ever been worth committing to?
The process is necessarily one that grinds individuals down, because if every individual who went into Parliament could do anything he or she liked, the country would be even more chaotic. There has to be some reconciliation of views and differences, and that means that politics, quite honourably, is about a lot of compromise. Now, there's dishonourable elements of politics too, but the whole process is one which I think is very tough on the individuals concerned, but in itself is necessarily about compromise, give and take and so on, and I think there's nothing wrong with that. But when you look at the new bunch of members of Parliament who arrive, as we had a great bunch of them arrive from Victoria after the 1990 election, you realise they are very different people from the people who've been around there for 15 years, and that makes you think, yes, things have changed, and maybe it's time to move on. I think perhaps everybody has to have the edges knocked off them. You get to the point where enough edges have been knocked off you, it's good to move over and let somebody else come in and have a go.
Mm. I get very angry when the electorate writes letters to you when you come out in support of politicians, because the electorate itself is dishonest. I mean, what they are accusing politicians of is something that in many ways they have made those politicians. And you've only got to look and see what happened to the Liberal Party at the last election when they did stand up and tell it how it was. And what happened to Paul Keating and the Labor Party when they stood up and told it how it wasn't.
Hmm.
And then the electorate says, well, look, you're breaking your promises. But if you don't promise them everything, including perhaps Arpège, you just get all sorts of nasty, smelly things tossed at you.
John Button, you remember that Menzies once warned Australia that they'd soon have the third generation of public servants who were born and bred in the ACT. You've talked about the permanency of the press gallery. How do you feel about the long life of members of the public service? Do you think that's an appropriate part of a modern political system?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that's something which governments of either political persuasion in Australia have not grappled well with. I mean, I think both the Fraser government and the Hawke government came into office with ideas about interchanging public servants with the private sector and that sort of thing, and I think in both cases it was stymied in one way or another. It didn't work certainly as well as they anticipated. Can I just go back to the political process, though, Phil? You know, you'll remember the quotation, or Fred will better than I do, but Winston Churchill once made some comment about this. You know, that it's a terrible process, but when you look at the alternatives, it's not so bad. And I mean, that's a terrible defence of anything, to put it in those terms, but I think it's probably the best still.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. But, John, I'm making the point that the world is changing fast. I can remember you telling me on a plane back from somewhere once, we met on a plane, that you'd just been with an ambassador, and that the role of the ambassador, it struck you, was an anachronism, in that you knew more of the people in the city than he seemed to know, and, of course, they were there because lines of communication were so slow and sluggish. Now, with instantaneous all-at-onceness, they were looking a bit irrelevant. But surely the same thing must be said for a permanent claque or clique of public servants.
Yes, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, I'm not sure what I'd do about it. But you know, I think in some ways the American system has a lot going for it in this sort of interchangeability and.
In other words, they all come in with the new president, and that.
Yeah, there's that element. But even within periods of a president, there are changes, you know. I was recently at the John Kennedy School in Boston, John Kennedy School of Government, and 12 of that the faculty there left to work for the Clinton administration. But even in the time of the Republicans, people had been leaving there, you know, in ones and twos to work in the administration and come back there. And that seems to me to be a nice flexibility which we've never had in Australia.
Talking about flexibility, Fred, once in a while, and they're pretty infrequent, there's a conscience vote in the House, in either of the House, and suddenly the debate is electric. And it makes you wonder whether perhaps there shouldn't be more conscience votes, that perhaps the members are being whipped too much too often, which is stultifying debate and making people merely sort of Bundy clock punchers.
Yeah, I think that the Parliament is over-disciplined in that sense. And again, in the Senate, some worthwhile efforts have been made to provide committee opportunities for looking at bills, and the party discipline tends to fall away a bit. I can't remember any example of a bill being sent off for proper examination by a committee with evidence being called that you didn't get recommendations for change, and virtually in every case there's been cross-party support for change. Now, I think the whole system would work better if there was a bit more real involvement of the Parliament in the legislative process. And I just would have put in a quick plea for the new building. I think having the executive shoved over in its own corner might ultimately mean that at some point the Parliament starts to assert itself and its legislative role in a different way. I think it's pathetic the way every dot and comma of a bill is seen as sacrosanct, and yet the government brings the bill back for correction, usually in the next, very often in the next session. So, yes, all that could be made much more realistic, but I do think that if you're a student of what's happened over the last 15 years in the Senate, some people have done very good work in freeing up that process. The trouble is there are no political rewards. No one takes any notice of it. The Senator does a very good job in getting some amendments to a bill. He won't get any political kudos from the media or anyone else.
I was going to ask whether you'd had post-coital problems, post-coital depression, Jenny, but it's an appalling phrase. Let me find another one. Did you have withdrawal symptoms when you left politics? Did you really miss it desperately for a while?
I didn't even miss it undesperately.
Yeah. Truly?
Truly. I mean, I said to you before, I just don't believe that that's a very productive thing.
No, but believing and feeling are different things. You didn't sort of suddenly think, my God, that part of my life is over and
I
feel...
Well, of course it was, but at no stage since then have I thought, gee, I wish I was over there, involved in that debate or doing something or other. No.
But Fred, you do, surely.
No,
I mean, you and I bumped into each other the other day in Queensland and you were ropeable about Mabo.
Well, that's an issue that I'll be involved in because I've had a lifelong interest in Aboriginal affairs, but I'd have to say I haven't had a single twinge about leaving the political process. I'll make one quick confession. The Friday before the election, I was driving along talking to my wife, and I said to her, look, you know how cheerful I've been since I said I was leaving Parliament? She said, yes, you have been. I said, look, I may just have, I might fall in a hole after the election. Maybe when I see all these guys being sworn in, I'm going to feel, oh, gee, I really should have stuck around.
Our guys, you see.
Yeah, sure, yeah. And so I said to her on Monday, John, I don't think I'm going to fall into that hole. And I must say that it's been a blessed relief. And I'm unfortunately no taller, but I feel a lot lighter.
John, you and I have quite a few friends in Canberra who are clinging to their parliamentary seats because they're genuinely terrified of the being out of the boarding school.
Is that the reason? I've never asked them as directly as you clearly have, but I suspected that.
But they lose their infrastructure, they lose their identity, they lose the applause. They lose a lot, don't they?
The psychic salary, as the Prime Minister calls it.
Is that what it is, the psychic salary?
That's what he calls it.
Mm.
He would.
He gets better pay than other people, though.
But, John, you really think they have nothing to fear if they've got half a brain?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Phil, I was lucky because I was sort of adjusted to leaving. I mean, I think well in advance.
And you chose your own time, didn't
that's
you?
That's right. Yeah. And I went back to Canberra a week or so ago and I felt no nostalgia at all. But I guess people who are sort of untimely plucked from politics... defeated in an election or something, the trauma for them would probably be considerably more difficult, I think.
Mm. And no disappointment, Fred, that you didn't make it to the lodge, for example?
No disappointment about that. I think the one additional job I would have liked to have had a chance to do in politics was to be industrial relations minister. I think that is such an important area of change. You can't rerun reels, so I couldn't, I think, have gone back to Aboriginal affairs. But that's the only thing that I sometimes think, gosh, that's a job it would have been good to do. But now I'm finding outside politics there's a chance to focus on the things I'm really interested in, and I'm finding people are extraordinarily helpful, and it really is, it's marvellous. You don't have all the time that you waste in politics. You can just get on with the things that you think are important.
And Janine, what about Schadenfreude? Have you enjoyed that feeling as you've watched your old party stumble from disaster to disaster, proving your indispensability?
Of course not, partly because I've never believed I was indispensable and partly because it's one of those hiccups that all political parties go through and I guess they'll come out of it.
Well, the trouble is when you characters leave politics, you all become bloody columnists. I mean, the newspapers are now choked with the columns of ex-journos. I'm sorry, of ex-politicians. There's Cohen on one page, Turnover, there's Button on the next. It makes the life of the freelance pundit perilous, but I suppose you're perfectly entitled. Look, Janine, Fred, John, thanks enormously for coming, and may you enjoy your twilight years creatively, productively, and profitably.
Nice to talk to you, Phil.
Good to talk to you, Phil.
We'll all grow old gracefully on that
together,
note.
The four of us.
Tell Fred Cheney to write me a letter and tell me what he's up to, will you, Phil?
Okay, right, Fred.
I'll catch up with you in Melbourne, John.
Come on the program and just pass your messages around. Bye, gang.